Microsoft under fire for antitrust violations again. From American Public Media, I'm Stacey Vanek Smith, and this is the Marketplace Midday Update. We'll also hear more a little later about how companies are preparing for the fiscal cliff and why some cities are cutting taxes for businesses.
Don't miss the numbers, the news, and Kai's final note. Subscribe to the Marketplace podcast. Find it on iTunes or online at marketplace.org/podcasts.
This morning, European regulators charged Microsoft with an antitrust violation. Again, the software giant is under fire for not meeting the terms of its 2009 antitrust settlement with the European Union. From London, Marketplace's Stephen Beard reports.
Microsoft stands accused of breaking EU competition law. The company failed to fully comply with an agreement to offer its customers a choice of web browsers. Microsoft admits the failure, but says it was due to a technical error, which it has now fixed. That explanation didn't seem to impress EU Competition Commissioner Joaquin Almunia when he spoke at a news conference in Brussels this morning.
We have a basic principles in our competition rules that if companies enter into commitments, they must do what they have committed to do or face the consequences.
Those consequences could be severe. Theoretically, Microsoft could be fined up to 10% of its global revenues, some $7 billion. The timing of today's announcement could be significant. It looks like a warning shot as Microsoft prepares to launch its new Windows 8 operating system. In London, I'm Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
On to a little bit of a brighter note for Microsoft. Earlier today, my colleague Jeremy Hobson talked with Marketplace Tech Report host David Brancaccio about the release of Windows 8.
Hello there, Jeremy. I'm dealing you cards from a deck of cards. Okay, give me your little finger, okay? I'm going to move one of the playing cards around to a different position.
All right.
Jeremy, that's what Windows 8 is like.
Just moving these tiles around.
Yeah, they call them tiles, and that's how you get into your different things, your Microsoft Word, your email. The tiles are live.
Just like on an iPhone or a smartphone, the way that you have your app tiles.
One big difference with Apple, and this is the key difference with Windows 8, which is on an Apple, the operating system used by the iPad and the iPhone is different from the one used on a regular desktop where you use a mouse.
Right.
Different. Microsoft Windows 8, it's all the same. So you can have a seamless integration. And there's some cool new bits of hardware coming out, actual computers, laptops that switch between regular good keyboard, laptop style to do your real work, your writing, and then you flip it or you turn it or you tear off the screen and suddenly it's a tablet that you can poke with your finger.
Now, isn't there a concern that with a big change like this, some Windows users will be turned off and will decide to switch over to a different operating system, perhaps Apple?
I know. The news media loves the story of finding the person who doesn't like change. It's like a meme, right? This is not the Dead Sea Scrolls, Jeremy. This is a computer system, which over time is going to change. It's like that relative I have only buys Mercury Marquis over and over and over. If the auto industry designed for him, you know, where would we be? There is some change, but here's the thing. See these tiles here?
Yeah.
One of the tiles on the new system is marked desktop. You press it, and boom, it looks like a standard style Windows with the desktop look that you've come to know and maybe love.
The old way.
Back to the old way with a click of the finger.
If you absolutely hate change. Well, David, I mean, I'm sure that Microsoft is going to be worried about businesses and whether businesses, which have been the bread and butter of that company, will adopt this new platform.
Yeah, no businesses like to flock to a new operating system. It's simply an expense. It took businesses forever to adopt Windows XP.
Right.
But over time, they're going to gravitate to this. In fact, there's one very large corporation that's going in.
Which one is that?
Going the whole hog, Microsoft. Steve Ballmer, the CEO, says that all 94,000 Microsoft employees got to use Windows 8, whether they like it or not.
Well, I'm sure it was tough to convince them. Marketplace Tech Report host David Brancaccio, thanks so much.
It's my pleasure.
And now, let's do the numbers. After a truly dismal Tuesday, markets are mixed so far this morning as our market's midday checkup. The Dow Jones Industrial Average is up 49 points to 13,152. The S&P 500 basically flat at 1413. The NASDAQ down about 3 points to 2986. Shares of Microsoft are down on those antitrust accusations. Shares of AT&T are off as well after the telecom giant announced some disappointing earnings and said Apple was partly to blame. Ma Bell said a short supply of iPhone 5s ate into sales. Boeing is flying high so far today. The plane maker announced better than expected profits, partly thanks to an increase in the demand for passenger planes. Now, for a closer look at what the markets are doing, we turn to Gus Fauché, senior economist at the PNC Financial Services Group. Good morning, Gus.
Good morning.
Gus, is this drop a reaction to some of the not-so-great company earnings we've been seeing, or do you think this is sort of speaking to something more fundamental about the economy?
No, I think the economy looks like it's improving. Housing market is turning around. Consumer spending remains solid. So this is, I think, in response to some of the weak company earnings reports that we've received over the past couple of weeks.
And why have earnings been going down?
Well, I think that there's been pressure. Actually, earnings are up, but there's been pressure on revenues. Revenue growth has been weaker than expected. I think a lot of that is coming from the softness in Europe. These are big companies that are exposed to Europe. There's recession there, and so that's weighing on revenues from overseas. And then the stronger dollar is also weighing on revenues as well.
What are you going to be looking for going forward from the economy and the markets?
Well, I think that markets perhaps got a little ahead of themselves. The economy looks like it's continuing to expand. We do have some weight from concerns over about what's going to happen to taxes and spending next year. But the fundamentals are looking better. We're adding jobs. Consumers continue to spend. But I think, perhaps investors' expectations of earnings got a little bit ahead of themselves. And so as those weaken, we may see a little bit of a pullback in the stock market.
Gus Fauché, senior economist at the PNC Financial Services Group. Thank you, Gus.
Thank you.
And now, with a look at what we can expect from the markets moving forward, here's Mark Garrison.
There's uncertainty around the world, whether it's China's economy, the euro, or the American presidential election. So there's no shortage of news to worry investors and economists alike. Russell Investments chief market strategist Stephen Wood sees choppy waters ahead, but not a violent storm.
I still think there's going to be some volatility. We don't know that there necessarily needs to be a dramatic sell-off.
A somewhat hopeful manufacturing report came out of China this morning, but new numbers out of Europe today are weak, so there's no clear indication of a broader global upturn. But come November, at least one big question gets an answer.
Somebody's going to win the election in the United States, and they're going to have an agenda for moving forward.
Once that agenda is known, investors can place their bets accordingly. In New York, I'm Mark Garrison for Marketplace.
You've heard the expression, you have to spend money to make money, right? Well, some U.S. cities have a slightly different arithmetic in mind. They're trying to make money by cutting taxes for businesses. Marketplace's Jeff Tyler has that story.
At least five times a week, Rogelio Navarre from the mayor's office makes cold calls to local businesses.
Good afternoon. I'm calling to reach out to businesses in the West Valley and find out if there are any business assistance our office can provide in the form of tax incentives.
Companies relocating to Los Angeles don't have to pay the city's business tax for 3 years. Matthew Carrots heads the mayor's Office of Economic and Business Policy.
Since we put the three-year business tax holiday in place, we've seen a 200% increase in the number of businesses registered here in Los Angeles since 2010.
Businesses like the Encore Tax Consulting Group.
That was actually a big deal for us to come here because we wouldn't have to pay that gross receipts tax for 3 years.
Armando Jamjian is Encore's managing director. The company advises other businesses about exactly these kinds of tax incentives. He crunches numbers on a calculator to figure out how much his company saved.
It would have been about $15,000 to $20,000.
That's all lost revenue for Los Angeles. But these kinds of incentives are increasingly common across the country.
Cities are desperate. And they have to discount as much as they have. It's clearly a rational response.
Don Siegel is dean of the business school at the University at Albany in New York.
Many of these types of businesses don't need to be located in a metropolitan area. So in order to attract businesses to a downtown area, the cities have to offer these incentives.
Los Angeles has also cut taxes for car dealerships, but the incentive isn't always necessary. I spoke with one Subaru dealer who said he would have opened his new car lot in the city even without the tax break. In Los Angeles, I'm Jeff Tyler for Marketplace.
There's a new way to look at the political divide thanks to YouGov Brand Index. It just released a report on the brands favored by Democrats and Republicans. The top three brands for Democrats, Google, Amazon, and Cheerios. M&M's and PBS made the top 10. For Republicans, Fox News, The History Channel, and Craftsman topped the list, followed by Clorox and the Discovery Channel.
Shh.
show Marketplace how much you like us. Stay connected to our hosts, reporters, and top stories on Facebook. Find us at facebook.com/APM Marketplace.
As part of our coverage of what matters to voters this election year, the real economy, we've been hearing from Loudoun County in the swing state of Virginia. It's not far from Washington, D.C., and it's considered to be one of the counties that could turn the presidential race. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer visited Loudoun County and talked to two longtime residents about what changed Loudoun from reliably Republican to a toss-up.
79-year-old Bob Potts is sitting on the big front porch of his farmhouse, listening to a chorus of cicadas. A bum knee is keeping Potts from milking his 85 cows. Potts owns Loudoun County's last big dairy farm, near the town of Purcellville. He says 50 years ago, the closest Purcellville came to a traffic jam was Saturday night.
You couldn't drive through Purcellville because of town would be full of people walking on sidewalks and down the middle of the street and everywhere else.
Stanley Calkins remembers those days. He's 87. He's owned a jewelry store in nearby Leesburg for 50 years. I asked Calkins how Loudoun County went from a farming community to what it is today, a developer's dream with condos and new homes sprouting up all over the place.
We were a farming community. When the developers came, we weren't ready for it. And they offered farmers a lot of money and they sold their farmland.
Calkins remembers a time when those farmers were reliable Democrats. The Republican reign in Loudoun started in the 1950s, when many crossed party lines to vote for Dwight Eisenhower.
Democrats put a great big sign up. It said, Democrats for Ike.
But in 2008, Loudoun County voted for President Obama. Calkins says many of the county's newcomers are registered Democrats, and Loudoun has the highest median income in the U.S. So will voters give President Obama credit for the good times, or will Democrats start parading around with Romney signs? Calkins says 4 years ago, everybody was talking politics. This year, not so much.
Everybody's sort of going under the carpet. You don't know what's going to happen this time around. Sitting at the lunch table, nobody wants to talk about it or argue about it, you know.
Back at the dairy farm, Bob Potts is also closed-mouthed about the election. He's undecided and says he may not make up his mind until he steps into the voting booth. In Loudoun County, Virginia, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
Whoever gets elected next month, one of the first issues they will have to tackle is the budget. There are only 68 days left until the end of the year, which doesn't give Congress much time to hash out a solution to the so-called fiscal cliff. Worries about those draconian cuts have a lot of companies taking action, as David Weinberg reports.
Many companies are holding back on new hiring and investment. GE recently announced that it's reducing its debt to avoid higher possible interest rates. And I heard that J.P. Morgan created a war room.
Yes. Yes.
Scott Talbot, a senior VP at the Financial Services Roundtable, confirmed the war room. He says that the companies he works for, big corporations like Visa and J.P. Morgan, detest uncertainty in the market.
The fiscal cliff creates a large amount of uncertainty.
That uncertainty is also a big worry for retailers. David French runs government relations for the National Retail Federation. Retailers are worried that talk of potential tax increases could spook consumers in the midst of holiday shopping.
You know, some of our members are probably concerned that they would become innocent bystanders.
Both groups have also taken action by making their case to Congress for how to avoid the fiscal cliff. I'm David Weinberg from Marketplace.
If you want to learn more about the fiscal cliff, check out our website. We've got Patty Hirsch's whiteboard explainer of what it is and what it means. Some good news from the housing market this morning. The Commerce Department just reported sales of new homes in the U.S. rose 5.7% in September to their highest level in 2 years. Two cities that have seen strong growth in housing, Detroit and San Francisco. They go head-to-head tonight in Game 1 of the World Series. From Detroit, WDET's Rob St. Mary has more.
The last time the Tigers won the World Series was 1984.
It would be great to see them finish up and close it out here in Detroit so we can really celebrate.
Eric Rayford is a Detroit native. His new condo is less than 3 blocks from where the Tigers play.
Just the energy of having the people downtown and seeing that is a positive.
Rayford's two-bedroom, 2,000-square-foot condo cost him just under $140,000. His realtor is Joy Santiago. She says for the money, you couldn't get anything close to this in San Francisco.
For what he paid for the property, it is
a fantastic value. San Francisco probably would be 10 times that.
Santiago says move-in ready condos are selling much faster these days. She says Detroit's current financial problems and the possible reduction of city services are not scaring buyers.
They're not afraid to buy real estate because of it. They see the upswing.
As for that upswing, Tigers fan Eric Rayford hopes an exciting championship season will echo long after the cheers die.
That's one of the reasons why I choose to stay in Detroit is access to the Big Four sporting events.
In Detroit, I'm Rob St. Mary for Marketplace.
And finally, Italian fashion house Gucci is taking its brand off the beaten path. Gucci teamed up with bicycle maker Bianchi to make an 11-speed bike. It has a carbon fiber body, a custom leather seat, and several Gucci flourishes, of course. The price tag, $14,000. And that is not counting the $890 matching helmet and the $105 water bottle. In New York, I'm Stacey Vanek Smith, and this is the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.